90.1 KZSU Stanford, and we are listening to Stanford Spotlight with Ramzi Salty, who teaches Arabic at Stanford. Ramzi is originally from Lebanon.
Born and raised in Lebanon, but also in Jordan, Kamla, because as you know, in 1975, Lebanon started experiencing this horrible civil war that lasted well into the 90s. And I don't know what it is about my parents, but they had a feeling that this little civil war was not going to be so little, and they moved us to Jordan. So I really graduated from high school in Amman, Jordan, and then came to the United States back in 1983, believe it or not, and I've been here ever since.
So would you be, would I be right in assuming you speak French?
Well, yes, because as you know, the Middle East was sort of carved up into by the British and the French, and so linguistically, Lebanon and Syria speak French as a second language to this day, whereas Jordan and Iraq and other countries speak English as a second language. Arabic, of course, is the official language. And so for me, I grew up speaking French and Arabic. And then when we moved to Jordan, suddenly I had to learn English because nobody spoke French. And they almost made fun of you for speaking French, you know, in Jordan, because they were like, ooh, what is this language? We don't understand any of it. And I had to really pick up English. So English to me is my third language. And to this day, I tell people, you know, the language you grew up with is the language that you dream in and the language that you feel. Because to this day, something happens and my expressions come out either in Arabic or in French. English, I'm yet to get there, Kamla, but any day now.
Listening to you, it doesn't sound that English is your third language.
Well, thank you. No, but I have been in the United States for decades now, since 1983. And so, of course, I've picked it up. But I always, when I'm teaching Arabic here and I talk to my students, I always love telling them stories about my freshman year at Santa Clara University right here in the Bay Area, where my English was really a total translation from Arabic. So, you know, in Arabic, we don't have the verb to be. So, you know, if you want to say I am here, you say I here, and you don't say, you know, there's no verb to be to conjugate. And so, you know, I went around speaking like that. I, Ramzi, my parent is Jordan, you know. And so in a way, it's funny, but it's really to tell you how much linguistically, when you learn a language like English late in life, as I did, you really have to be so conscious of the way, you know, the adjective has to follow the noun rather than go before it or the other way around, sorry. And so it's just been an experience, and I try to use it to make them more comfortable about learning Arabic, because we've got around 120 kids learning Arabic right now at Stanford. This is unbelievable, Kamla. I mean, I never thought I'd see the day where we would have three or four sections of beginning Arabic, because the numbers are so high. But I am delighted to have them all. I hope some of them are listening this morning, and I want to say, can I do what they call a shout out?
Yes,
I'm going to say assalamu alaikum, marhaba to any and all of my students who may be listening to Kamla's wonderful show today, Stanford's Spotlight, and I'm delighted to be here.
So the phrase salamu alaikum is something that if you grow up in South Asia, you kind of understand. It means greetings, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, literally, it means peace be upon you. And it's such a wonderful phrase, because when you're approached by a stranger, and this, I guess, dates back to Bedouin times, and you were living, you know, in a sort of a caravan situation in the desert where you were constantly traveling, when you saw a stranger arrive, often on horseback, you didn't know whether they were friend or foe. And so the fact that they would come and approach you with assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, means that they came with peaceful intentions. Right away, you could sort of let your guard down. And it caught on, and still in modern Arab society today, everybody greets each other with assalamu alaikum. And the response, as you may know, is wa alaikum assalam. So you kind of invert the words a little bit. But I do love it. It tends to be more of a Muslim expression, but it's so widely used that really even Christian Arabs like myself tend to use it all the time. I do love greeting people in a peaceful way, and so why not?
And wa alaikum salam means?
Wa alaikum salam, so the end upon you, peace. So you've returned the favor.
So like I mentioned, if you grew up in South Asia, that's a term that we often hear from the Muslims, where they say salam alaikum, and then you greet them by saying wa alaikum salam.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what a wonderful way to start the day with peace.
And in your class of 120 students, what is the composition?
Well, this is very interesting because, you know, I don't know how far you want me to go, Kamla, but when I started back in 98, we literally had 3 to 4 students in Arabic. Arabic was considered a very special language, a less commonly taught language. And so we were lucky to have 2 or 3 kids in beginning Arabic, maybe 1 or 2 in second year Arabic. And we would really have to bend over backwards to get these kids to, you know, continue with their Arabic studies. Here we are, you know, all this time later, and we have 120 kids that come from all backgrounds. I would say, you know, about 30% of my kids are probably Arab Americans. They were born and raised in this country to Arabic-speaking parents, and so they grew up in there and at home speaking Arabic, or sometimes refusing to speak Arabic. And then by the time they get to college, they kind of come to me and say, "Well, my parents always spoke Arabic, and we didn't want to at home, but now I'm thinking maybe I should." And they start taking Arabic, and you can kind of see them going, "Oh, that's what my mom said when she would tell me to clean up my room," or something, you know, like that. And so they pick it up quite quickly because I think they've had sort of exposure to it. I also have many, many students from India and Pakistan. They're often, you know, sort of familiar with classical Arabic, but they're not very familiar with it in terms of daily conversations and things like that. But they tend to be really good at pronouncing the letters in Arabic and the sounds. And then, of course, the rest of them, and this is, shouldn't be any surprise at this point to your listeners, are regular old, you know, Americans who, you know, you would never know. I've had students who are on the baseball team here at Stanford, down to students who are in, you know, in the art history, and it's just such a nice melange of students of all colors and ethnicities and religions coming together within this classroom and speaking the beautiful language of Arabic. Now I've got to, you know, plug my language here.
You mentioned that the students from India and Pakistan speak classical Arabic. Is that because they read the Quran?
Indeed, indeed. And they read it so beautifully. But I mean, what I didn't realize when I was still, you know, a new lecturer here at Stanford is that, you know, although they read the Quran beautifully and can recite it often, you know, the whole thing beautifully, you take a word out of that verse and say, "Well, what does this word mean that you've been saying?" They go, "Oh, I don't know. All I know is this whole phrase means this." And so what they enjoy doing is starting to go, "Oh, so that word kitab in this ayah, in this verse in the Quran, actually means book, but it could also mean something else, you know." And so,
but kitab is a word that if you are from South Asia, you would know because it means book.
Yeah, that was probably a bad example, you know. I was trying to find something where I would get a hint of recognition from you, Kamla. But you know, there's so many. You caught me, you know. Kamla is really good, guys, on there.
No, because, you know, I went looking for Arabic words in Hindi and Urdu and English and found out that there are a whole bunch of them, like alcohol.
Yeah, I always tell the kids, you know, if nothing else, we gave you all the al words. Alcohol, of course, is in Arabic, alcohol. We've got words like algebra is al-jabr. We've got words like almanac in English. That comes from the Arabic word al-manakh, which means the climate. And so...
Monsoon.
Mausam, yes, absolutely. I never thought about that, but that's also another Arabic word. And so all the words that begin with al, to sort of, you know, people use them in English, and we kind of forget these words come from Arabic. And al, of course, in Arabic is the definite article, the. And so it's the something, the kahul, the climate.
And coffee?
Coffee is qahwa. Now, I'm not quite sure if that one comes from Arabic as well, but it does sound...
I was told that it is Arabic.
It sounds Arabic to me. I mean, have you ever seen that movie, Kamla, which was My Big Fat Greek Wedding
Yes.
or something? You know, it was kind of a hit a few years ago. And in it, the father, who was Greek, would claim that everything came from Greek, you know. So if they would say a word, you know, oh, this comes from Greek. And so I tend to do the same thing. I'm so enamored by my language or by teaching my language that I sometimes, you know, claim to Arabicize a few things that I'm not quite sure about. But certainly with the internet and with the wonderful websites out there, we can kind of go into a word and look at it historically and linguistically, where it came from and whether it was really an Arabic word, because most Arabic words come from a three-letter root. And so you kind of know it's Arabic because if you can tell what the root of the word is. I'm speaking grammatically, of course. And so it's quite easy to learn Arabic once you kind of understand that there are rhythmic patterns and almost algebraic equations that you can sort of just substitute X, Y, Z with the three letters of any root and come up with words that you don't need a dictionary to find.
So why does Arabic have this, why is there a sense that Arabic is one of the toughest languages to learn? Japanese is one because it has got three scripts.
Sure.
And Arabic, these are the two toughest languages to learn.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that my students maybe feel the first year is more difficult than the second, because I think the first year is all about the alphabet. The alphabet tends to really scare people. You know, we've got letters written in the same letter written in three different shapes, whether the letter is a those tend to be kind of tough sounds. But once they get into second year, it suddenly becomes one of the easiest languages, because once they've mastered the alphabet and the sounds, they realize that in Arabic, unlike English, and I had to learn English, so I know what of which I speak, English was memorization for me. You know, you hold an object, you say this is book and this is writer, and there's no connection between the word book and writer, whereas in Arabic, everything comes down to rhythmic formulas. So the book is kitab, and writer is katib, and letter is maktub, and so they all have the KTB root in them. And so once you realize that, you kind of go, oh wow, I can come up with words without, by just knowing the formula, without having to go to a dictionary. And I think that's why it's intermediate students, and that's the class I'm teaching this year, my wonderful intermediate students are really enjoying this kind of grammatical exploration of the language.
You also have a blog which talks about popular culture.
Yeah, I'm so happy you brought that up, Kamla. It's called Pop Culture in the Arab World. It's actually at www.author32.blogspot.com. And I started it a couple of years ago, really as a tribute to my favorite singer of all time, who is Fairuz. Anybody from the Arab world knows who Fairuz is. She's sort of the reigning diva of Arabic music. She's in her late 70s, Kamla, but I have been a fan of hers since the 70s.
But isn't it, she can no longer sing because there's some kind of a legal case against her?
Well, oh, wow, you are up to date, Kamla. I'm so happy to discuss this. But yeah, there was recently some kind of copyright infringement allegation by the heirs to her brother-in-law, believe it or not, who actually helped compose some of her songs. And the matter, I think, has been laid at rest. We really don't know the exact details. But there was a point where Fairuz, you know, this diva who's been around, this wonderful female vocalist who's been around for decades, was prohibited to sing in concert. And of course, not only the Lebanese, but people all over the Arab world rose and said, we don't care about copyright. No one stops Fairuz from singing. It's like stopping the sun from shining. And so I started my blog in a way to support this movement that says that, you know, we don't want to silence Fairuz. And boy, it caught caught on very quickly. I was getting emails and comments on my blog, and to this day, I think those entries on my blog tend to be the most popular, the Fairuz ones, and then it evolved into sort of a pop culture, and now with all the recent events going on in the Arab world, I'm constantly trying to do this, is to remind people that despite the political turmoil, despite the urgency of the moment, we still have a wonderful cultural side and a very beautiful side to Arabic music, poetry, and other cultural productions.
With that, you're going to play us a song, and this is, you said, a 2011 hit?
Yes, this is actually the number one downloaded song in Egypt. It's by a young singer named Hamada Hilal, and I discovered it only very recently, a couple of days ago, so I thought I'd bring it to your show. It's called Ana Masri, which translated means I am Egyptian. It's a really nice song, Kamla, because it's speaking about the current events, but in a very uplifting way, saying, you know, we hope there won't be any more needless deaths or violence in our country. Egypt, after all, is the land of the sun. And so it's called Ana Masri, and it's by Hamada Hilal.
I just want to have a quick rejoinder to Masri in Hindi, which is the language that is spoken in India. Misr or Misr means Egypt.
Oh, wow. So that's very, very close.
And we have the word Misri, which is candy, you know, the sugar candy.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know how that came about.
Well, maybe it's because Egyptians are sweet people. So
I think it has something to do with Arabs being traders of spice.
That could definitely be it, yes.
And so they must have brought the sugar from the Jamaican Islands or Cuba or wherever. I don't know how they traded, but I'm thinking that's how it must have come.
Absolutely. No, but in Arabic, the word Misr for Egypt really doesn't have a connotation with sukkar, which would be the word for sugar.
Yes.
But certainly I can see how it would in other languages sort of be adopted into the
And sukkar is shakkar.
Oh, wow. Hey, I think you speak Arabic, Kamla, without realizing you do. I'll give you 2 weeks in my class and you'll be getting an A+.
I think there are probably millions of people who use the word shakkar.
Well, I mean, anything sweet, you know, I'll take it any day.
So we are playing this song, which is the
Hamada Hilal, Ana Masri, right here on KZSU 90.1 FM.
أنا لي الشرف إن أنا مصري وهفضل مصري مهما هيحصل أنا لي الشرف إن أنا مصري بس زعلان على اللي بيحصل بصرخ وأنادي بأعلى حس وأعلى صوت للناس تموت ومفيش أمان جوا البيوت بصرخ وأنادي بأعلى حس وأعلى صوت للناس تموت ومفيش أمان جوا البيوت بس مصر هتفضل مصر بس مصر هتفضل مصر ومصر هتعيش مش هتموت الله أكبر على رجالة شارعنا الله أكبر على كل الجيش بتاعنا الله أكبر عليك وعلى شعبك يا مصر الله أكبر مليون أهل الحرية الله أكبر مصريين احنا المصريين سواء بقى مسلمين او مسيحيين احنا ولاد مصر مصريين مصريين احنا المصريين بنقول لا للارهاب والاجرام وتح يا مصر الله اكبر على رجالك شارعنا الله أكبر على كل الجيش بتاعنا الله أكبر خبر
خليكم ساكتين قالوا مجنون اللي رجع للمصري تاني امتى ويقنع ناس متغطين قالوا قانون الطوارئ قلنا ما الحكم ماشي نهب باسم الدين قالوا الناس مجانين وهنبنى 110 مليون في 3 سنين واحد كابس تملي من عام 81
90.1 KZSU Stanford. You're listening to Stanford Spotlight, and my guest today is Ramzi Salty, who teaches Arabic at Stanford. Did I say your last name right?
Well, yes. I mean, it's Salty.
Salty, okay.
Salty, but certainly I like the way you say it, Kamla. You sort of made it more delicate.
Thank you. So, Ramzi, we listened to, what were the songs we listened to?
Well, we started out by that song that we talked about by Hamada Hilal called Ana Masri, in which he sort of speaks about the contemporary events in Egypt right now, saying, you know, despite all these kind of this violence and this bloodshed that's going on, Egypt will always remain Egypt. And he's very optimistic in the song and looking forward to a much better tomorrow in Egypt. And from there, we sort of segued into the Taxi Band. I don't know if any people out there know who the Taxi Band are, but they were an amateur band that kind of released a song on the internet called Alu Magnoon. That was the last track we heard. And it's a critique of the Mubarak system, frankly. But because of the revolution and everything going on in Egypt right now, the song sort of went viral on YouTube, and then they started releasing other songs. So we actually listened to two of their songs. The last one was Alu Magnoon, and the one before that was called Sheikh Siyadin. Both are sort of critical of the governing regime right now, but they also are sort of doing it or poking fun at politics in general in a very satirical way. So they're not really these, you know, dead serious sort of criticisms of the government as much as they are a fun way of poking or making fun of, you know, politics everywhere and sort of saying, you know, politicians are always going to be politicians kind of thing.
And that is Taxi Band, and I'm assuming they're under 30?
Excuse me?
I'm assuming their age, they're under 30?
Under 30, yes. I thought you meant under 13. I think they shave, but...
under 30.
I think, no, definitely they're under 30, and you can check them out on YouTube, and I think they're even on MySpace at this point with songs that you can download. But I was happy to kind of play these songs because they're really all over Egypt right now. People are, Taxi Band, Taxi Band, Taxi Band, so, you know.
Do you know how they got the name Taxi Band?
I have no idea, but I can tell you, I've been to Cairo, Kamla, and taxis abide. So sort of it's part of the culture. There's even something called a service taxi, which is a shared taxi so that, you know, you don't really pay the fare on your own. You share it with other passengers going in that direction. And I think the whole taxi culture in Egypt, or especially in Cairo, tends to be a daily reality. So to call it Taxi Band doesn't sound so Western to me. It sounds very, you know, Cairo-centered. I don't know if your listeners or you have been to Cairo, but certainly, you know, it's a very, very crowded city, and to get around on public transportation is difficult. So the next... you have to know what you're doing. And so the next option would be to take these taxi cabs / what they call service and share the fare. And so I'm guessing that that's where they get their name, because they're really a band that speaks about daily reality in the streets of Cairo. So to call themselves Taxi Band, I think a lot of people would relate.
My only exposure to Egypt has been through cab drivers in New York.
Oh.
There were quite a few Egyptian cab drivers. And the first thing I would do when I jumped into the cab was, you know, find out where they are from. And then the minute they would say Egypt, I would say, you watch Bollywood films? And they would have this huge smile
on.
And then they say, yeah, Amitabh Bachchan and Shashi Kapoor. They would rattle off all these old stars from the 70s and 80s. And I actually have, videotaped a couple of them. And there was this falafel guy right next to where we stayed.
Ooh, delicious.
Yeah, and he would always say, Hindi. I think that's the word
exactly,
for Indian.
That's exactly it. It's Hindi. Yeah.
Yeah, so Hindi. And I would say, no, I'm an Indian. He said, no, you're Hindi.
Yeah, he's trying to teach you Arabic right there as you have as you eat his falafels.
Yeah, and the only other thing I know is Pico Iyer. He's an essayist and writer for Time magazine, and he had mentioned in his book, and we spoke to Pico about it, he said the most famous actor in the world is Amitabh Bachchan, a
wow.
Bollywood actor.
In the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently when Mr. Bachchan was in Cairo a few years ago, he was mobbed. He could not step out of the airport.
Wow.
There was something else happening, and he was just mobbed because the crowd just descended
wow.
on him.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one famous Egyptian is Omar Sharif.
Yeah. You know, that's so funny, Kamal, because as you were saying that, I was sort of picturing the arrival of Omar Sharif maybe, you know, a few decades ago when he was at his prime. And just he couldn't go anywhere. And to, you know, for him to go to Cairo was like an event that was covered by television, you know, before political realities. He's had such a profound impact. So I'm relating him to Omar Sharif as well.
So so Egypt has got a very vibrant culture in music.
Absolutely. I mean, when it comes to music and when it comes to film, Egypt is it. And that's why, although, you know, there's what, 21, 22 Arabic-speaking countries on Earth, where, I mean, Arabic is the official language, they all tend to be familiar with the colloquial Arabic of Egypt. Because, you know, we all kind of speak this classical Arabic, which is the language of the Quran, which is almost frozen in time. I mean, you know, it can't evolve because you can't really mess with the language of the Quran. And so we tend to develop our own little dialects or colloquial dialects. So we have the Levantine Arabic, which is the one that I speak, and then we have the very distinct Egyptian dialect. Most Arabic-speaking people will understand Egyptian dialect in addition to their own because of the films and the music. And a smart or, you know, business-minded artists in the Arab world will release an album or a CD and always put one or two tracks sung in the Egyptian dialect because it's a huge market in Egypt, and it also allows their songs to traverse across borders throughout the Arabic-speaking world without having to remarket it for a certain audience. So the Egyptian dialect by far is the number one most understood dialect in the Arab world, in addition to classical Arabic, of course, being the united force.
I'm going to read a PSA and then we'll come back and play a couple of songs.
Yes, we're going to be back with Kulthum.
So we'll talk a little bit about Kulthum. American Forests is working to protect, restore and maintain one of our country's most precious resources. Healthy forests filter water, remove air pollution and provide homes for wildlife. You can help protect our environment by volunteering with American Forests or supporting their programs. For more information, please visit them at www.americanforests.org. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to 90.1 KZSU Stanford. And on Stanford Spotlight today, my guest is Ramsey Salty. I stand corrected. It is
wow.
Salty.
All right. You're sounding like an air. I'm thinking, who am I speaking to? Kamla or, you know, my cousins and friends back in the old country.
Okay. And Ramsey teaches Arabic here at Stanford. And we are talking about Arabic music. And the focus is on music from Egypt.
From Egypt, yes, indeed. I thought today we, you know, because if we were going to cover every country in the Arab world, I think we'd need a 24-hour show here. but I did try to limit it to Egypt, and I wanted to start today with these kind of contemporary songs that are really being listened to all over the internet in Egypt and the Arab world, because everybody's tuned in to what's going on in Egypt right now. But really, I think if you want to talk about Egyptian music, it would be almost what we say haram, a sin, not to play something by Kulthum. I mean, she is uncontestably the number one singer of all time. She comes from Egypt, and she had this voice, Kamla, like you wouldn't believe. The only problem with playing Kulthum on the radio is that each song of hers is about, what, 40 to 60 minutes. Well, there goes the whole show. I mean, it would be a very enjoyable experience to listen to it and analyze it. But really, I was thinking last night, well, what am I going to play on Kamla's show for Kulthum? I'd really like the listeners to hear something. So I tried to edit one of her songs, or just at least get an excerpt from it. And I was thinking, well, what song should I play? And I thought the song El Atlal, which is a poem that she set to music, you know, many decades ago, would be appropriate just because there's a part in it that talks about unchaining oneself and setting oneself free. The reason I chose that is because just checking the internet and sort of, you know, bloggers, and this song is sort of being used in Egypt now to kind of talk about freedom. And so although she's really using it in the context of love and telling the one she loves, please, you know, set me free because I cannot take this torment that I'm feeling, it's kind of now being spoken as if it was the Egyptian people speaking to the current regime. But either way, it's such a beautiful tune, and it says in Arabic, "Atini hurriyati atliq yadayya," which means give me my freedom and unchain my hands. And so I did manage to get you that little excerpt from a 60-minute song down to a song that's only a few minutes long. It's Umm Kulthum from Al Atlal.
And before we play Umm Kulthum, she is a post-World War II singer.
Yes, absolutely. She's been quite controversial in her day because, you know, with the Nasser regime, she fell in and out of favor with Nasser quite a few times. King Farouk, who was, you know, before Nasser, used to love her, and then Nasser for a while banned her from the airwaves and then realized that doing that would be equivalent to political suicide. And then so he, of course, she was restored, and she was, you know, she got along with Nasser quite well towards the end of her life.
And so Nasser is the army guy who overthrew King Farouk.
Yes, Jamal Abdel Nasser was indeed the first one. A problematic president to many, but still, you know, sort of nationalized the Suez Canal and did quite a few things that made the Egyptians very proud. And so Umm Kulthum was sort of provided the soundtrack to the political life of Nasser at the time.
So here we go.
أعطني حريتي أطلق يدي أني أعطيت ما استبقيت شيئا أعطني حريتي أطلق يدي أني ولا أم ولا عم أشكيله. نار حبك روحي وقلبي وجسمي وعقلي وجمالي في يدك. محتار أعمل لك إيه في دلالك وفي صدك ليها خبي غرامي وغرامي هلكني. لاشكي وابكي واحكي بلكي يا غزالي يلين قلبك. حبيبي تعالى الحقني شوف اللي جرالي من بعدك. سهرانة من وجد بناجي خيالك من قدك. وانا كاتمة غرامي وغرامي هلكني. ولا عندي لا أب ولا أم ولا عم أشكيله. نار حبك واكتب جوابات اشكيلك واتدلل ستة وصبرة وراضية بأحوالك من الأول. وانا كاتمة غرامي وغرامي هلكني. وافديك بحياتي وروحي واهلي ومالي. ولا تسأل روحي وقلبي وجسمي وعقلي وجمالي في يدك. محتار اعمل لك ايه في دلالك وفي صدك ليها خبي غرامي وغرامي هلكني. لاشكي وابكي واحكي بلكي يا غزالي يلين قلبك. حبيبي تعالى الحقني شوف اللي جرالي من بعدك. سهرانة من وجد بناجي خيالك من قدك. وانا كاتمة غرامي وغرامي هلكني. ولا عندي لا أب ولا أم ولا عم أشكي.
90.1 KZSU Stanford, and you are listening to Stanford Spotlight. And my guest is Ramzi Salty, who teaches Arabic at Stanford's Arabic department?
Well, we're the African and Middle Eastern Language and Literatures Department, which is part of the Stanford Language Center. And I've been teaching Arabic here for 13 years now, Kamla. So I've seen it, like they say, I've seen it all.
And so you played a couple of very interesting songs. One was an old song, and then the second one was a remix of the old one.
Well, yes. I mean, the first one is a classic. The second one I wasn't sure about because it's you know, some people consider it irreverent to take a classic by Asmahan, who is the singer of the both tracks, and sort of remix her and bring her, quote unquote, up to date. But I happen to disagree. This is just my personal opinion. I think that these classics tend to be ignored by the new generation. And so when you have them remixed in a way that makes them more accessible, it not only revives the song and resurrects it, but also encourages the young generation, the new generation, to go and explore the classic, the original version of the song. So the original we heard with Asmahan singing Ya Habibi Ta'al Al Ha'ni, a song that just, you know, goes right to the heart.
English, please.
Oh, my love, come and rescue me and see what has become of me since you left. I have no father, I have no mother, I have no uncle. So in love with you am I. I stay up nights thinking about you late. I haven't slept. Please come and see what your passion has done to me. Your passion is killing me.
So it's a very romantic song.
Oh, it's just I'm translating the lyrics and tearing up because my late grandmother used to play that. So it's a really, really old song we played, and I think it's been sort of brought up to date by many other singers, but contemporary singers. But in terms of the second one, it was also by Asmahan, and it was another one of her classic called Asqiniha, which is sort of bring rain to the drought. And this song was remixed by a young musician from Lebanon whose name is Zaid Hamdan. Zaid Hamdan, I mean, I'm going to make a prophetic statement right now and say he is going to be huge on the Arabic music scene.
Bigger than Amir Diab?
I think not so much bigger as more prolific, because Zaid Hamdan writes his own music, remixes his own music, and sings his own music. Whereas Amir Diab is really singing songs that were composed by other musicians and written by other people. So Zaid Hamdan took the Asmahan song Asqiniha and remixed it and called it Asmahan Rendered. And the song is actually unavailable commercially, but Zaid Hamdan himself was kind enough to send me the track and ask me if you could ever find a time to play that on the air. And I thought, how perfect for Kamla's show today, for the Spotlight show.
So we are hearing this for the first time?
We are hearing this for the first time, and I hope the Zaid Hamdan fans are listening out there, because I think they haven't heard this song either, but I do have Zaid Hamdan's permission to play this on the air today, and I'm delighted to have premiered it on your show.
Asmahan, what can you tell us about her?
Asmahan, very controversial, because after Umm Kulthum, you know, people were saying she's the next rising star. To a degree, Kamla, where, you know, in gossip, and I'm going to say this is gossip, you know, people were saying when Asmahan died tragically in a car accident, and nobody really understood why. You know, she was rumored at the time to be collaborating with the British against her own people. She had a very problematic life, but everyone agreed that when it came to singing, she had a beautiful voice. She also had these amazing eyes. She was Druze, was discovered in, by accident, and she's the sister of a very famous singer named Farid Latrash. So, she died, her life was cut short, so she never quite made it to Umm Kulthum status. But people would say, Umm Kulthum had something to do with her death, or the British had something, and there's all these conspiracy theories. Who knows what happened? But as you can hear from the song Ya Habibi Ta'ala and even Asqiniha, she really had a very special voice. Maybe at the same level as Umm Kulthum, I would say.
Who is she, the singer whose scarf got caught in the tires of the car?
Not quite sure. I don't want to say no. I know she died in a car crash, and it was very mysterious the way she died. I mean, so everybody agreed something had been done to the car, but by whom? There, the theories abide.
So we are almost towards the end. I'll have a PSA, and then we'll end with one last song that you're going to play.
Absolutely. I saved the best for last.
And you've been playing Arabic songs from Egypt.
Yes, I have. Thank you, Kamla.
9 Million.org is a global campaign to raise awareness and funds for education and sports program for refugee youth, many of whom are forced to spend years of their young lives away from home with little hope of returning. There are approximately 9 million children currently living as refugees, and you can help make their lives in exile a little easier. To find out how, please visit www.9million.org. That's www.9million.org. And we are going to be playing one final song on Stanford Spotlight. And my guest today has been Ramzi Salty, who teaches Arabic in Stanford. And Ramzi has been talking about Arabic music, pop culture in the Arab world, and playing Arabic songs from Egypt.
Indeed.
And we heard some of the singers that we heard were Taxi Band, whose song has gone viral, you said.
Yeah, absolutely. And Hamada Hilal, Asmahan, even Umm Kulthum.
And coming up at 9 o'clock is Daydream Disaster with Andy, who is already in the house. And we are going to wind up with one final song.
With Dalida, born and raised in Egypt, made it huge in Europe, committed suicide in 87, but her song lives on. This song, Hilwa Ya Baladi, translated into something like I Love Egypt, is probably the most popular song about Egypt ever.
And this is Dalida?
This is Dalida, and the song is Hilwa Ya Baladi.
You're listening to 90.1 KZSU Stanford, and I'm Kamla signing off, and Ramzi is also signing off with me.
يا بلدي KZSU Stanford.